Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 249 of Game Time with Manny. As always, I am here with Matt.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, I don't know. My brain is melting. No segue, no nothing. My brain just melted into a goo. It's pretty warm in here, but
that's not good.
No, it's warm outside also, though, which is like slightly better. At least it's not like snowing anymore.
It's gonna get even warmer this week.
Is it?
Yeah, like Tuesday's gonna be in the 70s.
No, man, I might have to wear shorts. That's crazy.
Now I have to ask, are you excited about the eclipse at all?
I would say approximately 0%. Yeah.
I'm kind of more excited that people will stop talking about it pretty much by Tuesday.
Are you getting a lot of people talking about it?
I feel like more people than it should be. But I mean, like, I guess, like, we are also, like, in, like, you and I are both kind of, like, in that path. So we're going to, like, get a pretty good view of this, I suppose. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be at work and I didn't purchase any glasses. So I don't know that I'll be looking at it. But, you know, I had to sign a permission slip so my girlfriend's son could look at school. And I got a campus security message from the college I work at saying, like, don't stare at the sun.
Did they not like get glasses for people at work?
No, they did not.
Okay, because my work did, so they're
like, oh yeah, boys. But campus police was like, please don't stare at the sun without glasses on. That's dangerous for your eyeballs. And I was like, that is true, but don't, you know, we're in Ivy League school, so people should be able to figure that shit out. So
yeah, Trump did it, and he's fine, I guess, right?
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but staring at the sun always reminds me. Someone I used to work with admitted that the most embarrassing thing he did as a child was he would stare at the sun, hoping that he would get powers like Cyclops from the X-Men. And that he could shoot lasers out of his eyes. And he was like, maybe that's why I have bad vision now. And I was like, you know, it could very well be. But I thought that was really funny when he told us that story. I was like, Jesus, man, that's no laser eyes yet that I can see. Keep going. Maybe the eclipse will do it. But he was like, I was 5. And I was like, no excuse. No excuse. You can't do that. I feel like we had two legitimate news stories on here, and then you and me just tossed shit into the blender
basically
of things going on. I mean, the first two here actually matter. Gearbox, in a shocking turn of events, was acquired by Take-Two, the company who publishes Borderlands for them. They were bought from Embracer. So now Take-Two can just do whatever the fuck they want with Borderlands. In theory, that means they own the IP too, so if they didn't want Gearbox to be making it, they could let anyone make it and or like have other spinoffs, you know, if they wanted to do anything with that. Other stuff came with Gearbox, like Gearbox for some reason owns Homeworld, which, like, I tried to trace the lineage of that because, like, Relic, one of the other companies in the news for Sega, they used to own a Homeworld, but then, like, something weird happened and I don't remember how. THQ, I think, had Homeworld and Relic developed it and it was published. Whatever. Anyways, Gearbox owned Homeworld. They owned Duke Nukem. Take-Two does not make a new Duke Nukem game. But, you know, I think that Borderlands is the reason that Take-Two did that, because it prints the money, basically. So
I will say, you didn't mention, I think, one of the biggest parts of this. Now, I am no, like, economist or what's the word I'm looking for?
Financial
advisor. Well, just like financial advisor, I guess, is a good one.
Yeah.
But as far as I understand, Embracer Group sold Gearbox for half of what they paid for.
So
which is probably not good.
Yeah, I did. I looked at this and saw financial people talking about it. apparently it's not as terrible as it seems because I can't remember why. There's like some type of like value mitigation or something that happened when they were purchased by Embracer that like makes this less awful of a return. I don't know, but people were saying it's not as bad as it looks. I like you, I know nothing about it, but yes, it does. Sure. It's like on its face value, you look at it and you're like, so did you just like lose half that money? Like, where'd that go? What happened here? This seems like a poor choice. And it, to me, it does really just seem like a poor choice because like of all of their studios, Gearbox would have been the one that has continued to make money and can continue to make money because they owned Borderlands. Like, sure, they were in a thing with Take-Two, but like that wouldn't have stopped Embracer from making money off of Borderlands products. But like, I don't know. And the thing that sucks again is this usually happens after acquisitions and mergers is Take-Two laid off a bunch of people. Right after the sale for quote redundancies, which sadly does happen in this kind of thing. You know, I would guess like marketing people and roles like that were affected where Take-Two already has that kind of stuff. The thing that I was curious about that I didn't really see anything about is Gearbox has been trying to be a publisher. So they've been like publishing games under Gearbox Publishing. Do you think like, they probably don't do that anymore, right?
I would take two, probably not.
I would guess, but like, so the reason I say that is I put another news story on here that there's a Blockbuster Indie Showcase on April 10th in 3 days at 1 p.m. EST. Gearbox Publishing is one of the people listed in there.
Oh, interesting.
As someone showing games. So it's very weird. I don't know. So they had existing deals already, but I would bet that going forward, they don't continue to do that because it doesn't really make much sense for a publisher to own a separate publisher when Take-Two could just, I don't know. Whatever.
I also thought it was a little interesting. I can't remember when I read this, but it was definitely like last week where the Embracer CEO was like, hey, It's a little too early to start buying studios again.
I was going to say that, and it was like, no. I mean, any time is too early, dipshit.
Yeah, you're done. Just no. Like, who the fuck is going to be like, yes, like I want to be bought by Embracer Group at this point? Right?
Yeah. I mean, and then if they buy you out, like, get a new job, I feel like. Because your studio is going to go down the toilet, probably. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's just, it's another one of those things where it's like they were banking so much on that, like, investment money that dried up in video games largely over the past, you know, 6-7 months. But, like, the stuff they acquired should have been able to make them money. Like, Gearbox should have been able to make them money. They bought the video game rights for the fucking Lord of the Rings.
Well, that, and they had Tomb Raider, right?
Yes, but what did they do with that? They licensed it to Amazon, so can make Tomb Raider movies / video games, but Embracer still owns that. But, like, yeah, literally Lara Croft was just voted the most iconic video game character of all time at the BAFTAs.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's like they have all these things that, in theory, could have made money. It's so fucking weird. It just sucks so bad. They did such a terrible job overall.
Well, I think they got too big too fast and it just blew up in their face.
Well, yeah, but they had no plan. Like, their plan was just buy studios. What do we do with them? I don't know. Buy them.
Buy studios and hope we get the money, the funding for it. And then the funding fell apart and then the whole business plan fell apart.
Yeah, so that sucks. And then, like we talked about, I mean, a lot of the bigger studios have gotten out now or been closed. Like, Saber is done with them now. So I don't know. Hopefully people stop being embraced by Embracer Group for all involved. Yeah. And this next news story, I think is such a fucking huge bummer, man. Sega laid off 240 people from their European studios, Creative Assembly and Relic, and several others. And the thing that I think sucks so bad about this is, like, people don't realize this, I don't think, but Relic and Creative Assembly, like, carried Sega financially through their, like, weird dark period in the, like, mid to late 2000s.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Total War was making them a ton of money, and, like, yeah, I don't know, man. It just seems like such a shitty thing. At least they sold Relic to some, like, holding company, so now they can technically be run independently. But it just, like, it seems like such a shitty way to treat two of the huge developers that, like, pulled you through a really dark time. Like, I get it that Sega's in a much better place now, and like Total War Pharaoh, I am to understand people were not, like, as super into. And I know that what was the other game? Total War Warhammer. That's that's Relic, right?
No, I think Warhammer is Relic, but I think the, like, any of the Total War is, all the Total War game, or, yeah, the Total War games are Creative Assembly.
Okay, because, like, they, apparently they were just, like, mostly told to just make DLC for that. Mm. And, like, that makes them a lot of money, but it, like, made a lot of their other projects, like, on the back burner and stuff. And one of the large things behind this is the canceled multiplayer shooter Hyenas that Sega pumped, like, infinite money into and then canceled when they were like, I don't think this is gonna work out. So it just sucks for these two studios as, like, two of the last large, like, strategy war game studios, I feel like, just is a bummer.
Yeah, that's
at least Relic lives on, you know? Or, I mean, so does Creative Assembly, but they had a lot of people laid off, so, like, I don't feel super confident about them putting out some huge strategy banger anytime soon, but at least Relic can continue to do stuff out there with what they have been doing. Did you play Pharaoh? Total War Pharaoh?
No, I haven't touched it yet. But, I mean, it came out to such, like, middling reviews.
Yeah, people did not seem to be super into it from what I had seen. And, what the fuck? I'm trying to think of what Relic's last game was. People also... Is it Company of Heroes 3?
Yeah, I just know that as
the... Company of Heroes 3 is... people loved Company of Heroes 1 and 2, but apparently 3 did not set the world on fire. And people had a lot of problems with it. So, you know, stuff happens and you don't always put out a banger. But it just sucks that now there is, like, no room for error, you know?
Well, okay, looking at it, like, it seems like it got an 81 on Metacritic.
Yeah, I just remember fans being, like, super weird and shitty about it. Compared to 2, so
it's like, to me, like, an 81 still a solid game.
No, yeah, I remember seeing reviews and being like, oh, that's cool, and then people just who are, like, super obsessed with it were like, it doesn't have these features and blah blah blah, 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 blah that the last one had. So I don't know, it's just, yeah, it's a bummer. I hope the strategy games seem to be in a rough place financially for people, so all video games are rough financially, so it's, we're continuing that trend. And these things make sense. I think there were a couple other layoffs that I missed putting on here, but it was the end of fiscal for all of the fiscal year for a lot of places, so that kind of stuff happens.
We had, like, one episode where we didn't have to talk about layoffs, which was a nice reprieve,
and yeah,
now we're back to the norm this week or this year, so
yeah. And people for months, years even, have been asking, when is Hollow Knight Silksong coming out? Mm-hmm. So much that Team Cherry has put out several statements being like, no, we're working on it, bro. Come on, give us time. We're a 3-person studio in Australia. And I feel that. I feel for them. Most people thought it was going to be out last year, mainly because of... you know, the Xbox showcase saying these are all games that are coming out in the coming year that it was showed in, like, 3-4 years ago. And they basically had come out recently saying, like, it's taking longer than they thought. However, recently, an Xbox store page for pre-ordering Silksong came up, right? Normally, not a big deal. Stuff like that happens all the time. However, it was also rated by the ESRB and the Korean rating board. And when games get ratings from both, from those types of boards, usually it means that they will be releasing within like 2 to 3 months.
Oh.
So hopefully sometime soon there is like a surprise, like, hey, bro, Silksong's coming out in like June or something. I don't know. But it's cool that there is like movement on the back end of a lot of these things where it actually looks like it probably could come out sometime within the next several months. Again, you can take that with a grain of salt. It doesn't always necessarily mean that, but in most cases, once the ESRB and other ratings boards start rating them, it's usually like relatively close to a release of some kind. So that's cool. And it should be day one on Game Pass, which is kind of crazy. I mean, I'll give Team Cherry infinite money of my own, but people could play it on Game Pass in theory.
Which I just saw, that game you're super excited about, Harold Halibut?
Harold Halibut, yeah.
That's coming to Game Pass day one as well.
Nice. I'm curious about that game because it has gotten some like pretty not great previews from people saying like,
oh,
it's a lot of like walking around and they think it's boring, but in a way that I still read it and sound like, I think I'll like this a lot. So I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, I'll play it regardless and it's an adventure game. So I'm in, but yeah, some of the previews, I don't know how well it's going to hit with people, but that's cool. It's going to be on Game Pass as well.
Yep.
And then continuing in the rumor mill, Jeffrey Grubb, he's getting out there with all kinds of wild shit recently. But one of the ones that caught my eye was he basically just said like, hey, we're going to hear about Gear 6 this summer probably. And what that means is because that Xbox showcase was confirmed for June 9th,
yeah.
I bet we'll see Gear 6 there.
Which that doesn't surprise me. We haven't heard about Gears like... Well, Gears 5 came out, what, like 2019?
Yeah, I think so.
So, like, that's like 5 years ago, so that doesn't surprise me at all.
No, yeah, and it's one of those things where it's like, I thought it was weird that we had not heard more about Gears of War in recent years. So, that's cool. I will take that.
There's been a rumor of, like, a remastered of, like, the trilogy.
There has, yeah, because that was one of the rumors that was going to come to PlayStation also.
So I'm kind of wondering if maybe they're like, hey, Gears next year, like Gear 6 next year. But for this year, like maybe even like this fall, we've got Gears, you know, the Gears trilogy on like Xbox and PlayStation and PC or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be sick. I'd take that. And then to go along with the Xbox showcase being confirmed for June 9th, Ubisoft Forward confirmed for June 10th. So, you know, you got the Summer Games Fest festivities happening with other showcases around then.
Can we just call it not E3?
That's what I would like to call it.
Okay.
Jeff Grubb Summer Games Mess, you know, whatever you prefer. Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure that like other companies like EA and stuff will announce that their things are happening around that same time as well. But if you can't wait for hot game news, like I said, April 10th, just a few days away at 1 p.m. EST, there's a blockbuster indie showcase, which they are calling the Triple I Initiative. And okay. My eyes rolled into the back of my head when I read that. But it's basically just a bunch of more prolific indie developers getting together for like a 45-minute showcase to show off stuff. I had mentioned Gearbox Publishing, which was not what I had originally intended to mention it for. The one that stuck out to me was Ponkle, the developers of Vampire Survivors, said they will be in there. So there will probably be more Vampire Survivors DLC, at least. And I believe the next game from the Dead Cells developers, Windblown, is supposed to be there as well. And this to me was one of those things where it was like, oh, maybe they're going to like talk about Silksong at this. And if they are, it's going to be a total surprise because Team Cherry is not listed in the list of many, many developers.
I wouldn't at this point, like I wouldn't be surprised if it's at the Xbox showcase in June.
Yeah. And that would be cool as well. Shit, I can't find the I can't find the thing that I was looking at for this. Give me one sec.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
Triple Y showcase. I had the looking at these, I can't, like, Evil Empire was the one I just said for Windblown. Gearbox Software and Gearbox Publishing are listed. That's weird. Heart Machine, they will probably show more of Hyper Light Breaker, their roguelike that they are coming out with. They made Hyper Light Drifter, but the Hyper Light Breaker has been shown recently at like a bunch of places like IGN and things, so maybe their early access comes out soon.
Oh, Humble Games.
Yeah.
They usually have some interesting things.
Humble, Thunder Lotus. They had made Spiritfarer, and I can't remember the name of their new game. Something Thunder. But yeah, it's just like a shitload of indie studios, and there will be like 45 minutes of people, you know.
With the list of how many studios is it?
It's a lot, yeah. So
it's just going to be like trailer after trailer. It's just going to be, I don't think there's going to be much talking. It's
no, they basically said that it is going to be like the more recent like Xbox game showcases where there's like not really much talking and it's just like trailer that goes all the way through. So that's cool.
42. So
yeah.
42 publishers in 45 minutes. So, like, it's going to be pretty much, like, probably about 42 games announced. That would be my guess. And each trailer is going to be about a minute.
Yeah. And the one that's going to be crazy is that I didn't see listed here, but Megacrit Studio, the people who made Slay the Spire, are on here. That's crazy. Because their new game, that was one of the ones where they were like, nah, fuck Unity, though. And just, like, changed to a different engine. So I'm curious to see what their next game is, because people love Slay the Spire, man. Holy fuck.
Slay the Spire was, like, one of those deck-building roguelikes I actually enjoyed playing.
Yeah, so. But people fucking love that game still. So yeah. I whatever they put out next, I think is will probably sell a shitload. But also, I just have faith that they will be able to have something super cool. So, yeah. So that, and then you put this last one on here, pirate games. We both like pirates. Flint Treasure of Oblivion was announced.
Yeah, it seems like it's like they're going for more of like a realistic, like historical take on pirates.
All right.
Which I think is kind of neat, and it's just gonna be like a tactical RPG, so we'll see. I just like historically accurate, more like, because like we were talking about that last pirate game that just came out last year, but that one seemed a little bit more supernaturally, where this one seems more grounded and like more realistic. So
wow, looking at this trailer, this sure is a tactical RPG. Holy fuck. That's crazy. That looks cool though.
Yeah, it does. So I was like, oh, that looks cool. I'm kind of excited about that one. So we'll just see how that plays out. So
yeah. And so that's really it for the news. I think we're gonna be on a mostly kind of news light period between now and
June
Summer Games Festival.
Yeah. Hopefully it will mean also that we won't be talking about any more layoffs. Like, hopefully this is it.
Yeah, I hope so, but you know,
probably not, but I hope so.
Yeah. There was like some slight positive news out of GDC of people saying it looks like funding is like slightly picking up, not anything crazy, but like more than the zero that had been going around recently. So maybe it won't be as bad soon for people to get funding for their games and studios. So yeah, with that, we can get into the games we have been playing.
Can I talk about one more news that has nothing to do with video games?
Yeah, sure.
You know how I'm obsessed with The Mummy, the movie The Mummy?
I'm going to be honest, this is not where I thought this was going, but yes, I do know how you're obsessed with The Mummy.
In celebration of the 25th anniversary, it's coming back to theaters.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow, you know what else is coming back to theaters this year? The Phantom Menace, Star Wars Episode One.
Let's just celebrate the one, the other one.
I mean, you and me went to see a different anniversary of the Phantom Menace in theaters with Nukia. I remember it was his first time seeing a Star Wars film.
Yeah,
that was crazy. One extra time seeing that in theaters was enough for me. But The Mummy, that's tight.
Yeah, I guess April 26th, I think I saw.
April 26th, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Big fan.
So, that, as I said, not video game related at all, but like,
hey, that's okay.
Favorite movie.
People need to know about The Mummy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a weird like age gap of like a 5-year age period where people are obsessed with The Mummy, and we are in that bubble. So
we very much are in that bubble.
so anybody out there listening, you should go support The Mummy.
So. Yeah, so that they can make a shitty reboot.
Hey, so they can put the second one in theaters as well, and then call it a day.
And then The Scorpion King.
I would watch the Scorpion. There's like 5 Scorpion.
There's like 100 Scorpion King movies. Yeah, it's crazy.
But the one with The Rock is, I liked it when I was a kid. I don't know if I'd like it as an adult.
Okay. So now with that extremely exciting news. We'll
get into the games.
Yeah, we can get into the games. I told you I've been on a bender.
Uh-huh.
I played Stardew Valley pretty much exclusively. I will say, like last year, I think sometime you were like, I booted up Stardew Valley and then played for like 40 hours. I did twice that.
Yeah.
So I'm like 70 some hours deep into my playthrough because I had never like beaten it before. My previous save actually is the day before year 2 starts. I was like the day before the last day of winter is when I stopped. I don't know why. But that was in 2016 when the game came out. So there have been like 5 huge major content updates since then. And, I have experienced almost all of it now. There's like a couple things I didn't do. Like once JoJo goes out of business, if you choose that route, the JoJo building can be made into a movie theater. But the stuff you need to build the movie theater is super rare and insane. Stardew Valley gets really weird later on too. Like one of the things that I have right now is I'm incubating a dinosaur egg in my chicken coop, and I can get a dinosaur who will lay dinosaur eggs for me so I can get dinosaur egg mayonnaise. It's got weird stuff like that. I think in the newest update you can get ostriches as well, but I have yet to see an ostrich or get an ostrich. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those games where it's just like it keeps layering on more things to strive towards.
Right.
And so I am at least at a point now where once this year is over, I think I can safely put it down, even if I haven't done everything. Because like I got to the part where you get that weird island farm and you can like go through this volcano dungeon, and then you get to a forge at the end and you can upgrade the best weapon in the game for ridiculous cost. But yeah, like I completed the community center, so I have, you know, the main game's plot, quote unquote, is done. It's really weird. And you
with all this stuff, is it easier to like upgrade it now than it was like, let's say, when it came out? Because there's just so much more content that it's just, you can upgrade stuff faster, or does it still take a long time to do that?
It still takes a long time to like go through everything. I think it especially takes a long time if you like don't know what you're looking for. Like the community center bundles are always the same unless you choose a remix version of it. So if this is like someone's second or third playthrough, like they know everything and how to get it. Whereas like I was looking at it being like, I don't fucking know where to get this fish. You know, right. Or like how to get these better crops or whatever. So it's just, I don't know. It layers on even more stuff though. So it's like, it's one of those things where it's like every day I felt like I was trying to do a bunch of different stuff. And I got to say this out loud to someone, you would not have experienced this because you've said you played Stardew paying JoJo for the bundles and the upgrades and you didn't really interact with the townspeople.
Right.
The world of Stardew Valley is fucking insane. I did not bond with as many people in my first playthrough. some of these scenes are fucking crazy. And I don't know how people were not just like falling over themselves talking about how weird this shit is, dude. There is a whole back plot of like the country that it takes place in, and is in this like deadly war with another country. So like one of the families, the Jody and then her son Sam, who like skateboarding, and her other like little son, early on you get a beach scene with Sam and his little brother being like, yeah, dad's at war. He's out there like killing the whatever soldiers, is what the little kid says. And he's like, he's going to come home soon. And then he talked to the older brother, Sam, and he's like, he hasn't said anything in a long time. I'm like pretty sure he died at war. And I was like, what the fuck is happening in this farming sim? And so for people who have played long enough, their dad, Kent, does come back at the first day of the second year. And his scenes are even crazier, man. My guy's got PTSD.
I don't know if I want that out of my
scenes experience. Where the wife is cooking popcorn and he thinks it's gunshots and freaks out. And I was what the fuck is this farming sim game, man?
I just liked how like peaceful it was. I don't want that out of my.
And so the one that really got me is I remember I had Shane, the one of the guys who is very clearly an alcoholic and works at the Joja Corp, the fake Walmart. I got one of his early scenes the first time I went through, and he's like basically talking to you while he's getting shit faced on the dock, talking about how he's like depressed and hates working in retail. Right. At the time I worked in retail, I was like, wow, super relatable. He goes down a dark path for the rest of it. He is like, he's passed out in his room at one point and his aunt thinks he's dead. And then you got to like break in and like save his life. And then later he's like passed out and almost accidentally kills himself falling off a cliff. Thankfully the ending of his story is he like gets sober and then is like way better and like really nice to his niece and stuff. But I was just like, what the fuck are we doing here? And then with later updates, you can, like I said, shit gets weird. Like there's dinosaurs and all kinds of wild shit, but you can become friends with a monster who's nice that lives in the sewer named Krobus. And you can also become friends with a dwarf who is in the mines. The dwarves and whatever race Krobus is have apparently been in some infinite war and they hate each other. And Krobus always asks if you are an assassin sent to kill him by the dwarves. And I'm just like, what are we doing here? What happened to my fun farming sim? Why has everyone got PTSD or is an alcoholic or whatever? Which Shane isn't the only one who's an alcoholic either. Penny's mom, Pam, is also an alcoholic. It's just fucking weird. There's a lot of like weird shit. And then other ones are like totally wholesome where it's like, let's put on a community fashion show. And you're like, this sure is a lot different than when Shane passed out in his own vomit, huh?
Yeah, that's yeah.
So I had to get that out there, but I was just like, you're playing this fun farming sim and you can be there having fun. And all of a sudden it's like popcorn's giving me PTSD, gunshots. And you're like, what the fuck is happening? So yeah, there's a lot of weird shit later on.
I'm just excited for his new game. Like, when is that coming?
Haunted Chocolatier. He said once this new update 1.6 comes out on consoles, then he'll be able to return to work on Haunted Chocolatier. So never. Well,
Jesus.
There's a new NPC on the island named Leo who like is a child who is like somehow abandoned on this island. I'm sure that his backstory, once I become friends with him, will be crushingly depressing as well. So that's cool. But yeah, I'm almost done. Grandpa's going to rise from the grave as a ghost and tell me that I'm fucking crushing it. So I can be set free to return to Dragon's Dogma 2, which I played last weekend. I was waiting until they put out a patch because I was getting like weird freezes when I was in town. The patch seems to have fixed that. It didn't like improve frame rate or anything, but at least I don't freeze in town and it runs well enough for me to play it. And I do still like it. I basically feel the same as I did last podcast where it's like, I think it's a cool game. I don't know that I like love it, but I like that it's got a vision. And it's sticking to it. I am like, I think 12 hours of playtime, which makes me not understand how long this game is, because I got to the second like world map area, which is like a big desert with a second huge like capital city in it. It's a different country. And people were trying to say like that's halfway through the game. And it's like I'm 12 hours in though. And yeah, people are saying it takes like a I don't know. I've seen all kinds of varying play times. People were like, it took me 20 hours. Some people are like, it took me 70. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? What were you doing? I don't know. In theory, I'm like halfway through. I don't know. But I'm having fun. It's cool. Doing quests. Okay, and good. Going through. So once I finish Stardew Valley, I will be able to get back on that and go through to some unknown amount of play time remaining. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like I've been trying to do more of the main quest to see if it gets more interesting. I don't think it does. I don't think it's really about that, though. So, and then the last thing I had been playing was a game that I got near the end of January. Amazon delivered it a week late. So by the time it came, Yakuza 8 came out the day after. So I put it on the back burner. But Another Code Recollection is a remake that Nintendo commissioned Arc System Works to do of a DS game called Trace Memory, which was like an adventure game about this girl named Ashley who is meeting her dad on this weird island for the first time because he like disappeared after her mom was murdered when she was young. And so your aunt is bringing you to meet your dad on this island. Then you find out that he was like involved in this weird memory changing technology and shit that ties into your past and all this stuff. But it was like a cool puzzle based adventure game on the DS called Trace Memory. People really liked it at the time. I remember like seeing articles in Nintendo Power and thinking like, oh, that's cool. But I was a kid. I was like 11 when it came out or something. So I didn't have enough money to buy it or whatever.
Right.
And then apparently it was one of those games where it was like way more popular in Europe. So they made a sequel for the Wii called Another Code R that only came out in Europe on the Wii. It did not come out in the US. But this game basically remakes both of those games, the DS one and the Wii one, in a modern context and packages them together.
Oh, that's cool.
I completed the first game. It took like 5.5 hours. It was okay. I will say they reworked it a lot because obviously it's not on a DS. It doesn't have two screens. Apparently the DS version had like way more puzzles in it. This has puzzles, if you can call them that. Some of them are like just, you know, do things in a certain order and they're like super simple. And then there's other
kind of like
insane.
Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
But is it kind of like Lego where like they're like Lego puzzles?
Sometimes, yes. But then other ones are like, take a picture of this thing and overlay it over this other thing. And it's like some insane thing to solve, but they only do that like twice, so they like let you know that the puzzles could get buck wild, but then they like don't use that really. It's very weird, and I don't know. The thing that drove me nuts about it though is because it's all about memory, you know. That's why it's clever that it's called recollection, and it like deals with memory. The main character Ashley meets this ghost boy D, okay, and he lived on the island. The main way that exposition is done in this fucking game is they walk into a room and interact with an object and then go, and then remember something. And okay, like, I say this again. I did like this first half. It just, after like the 40th time it happens, you're like, all right, man, we got to think of a new way to get exposition in here. So like, yeah, that's a little contrived, and like I could see the plot twist coming from like a mile away because there's only like five characters. There's like the girl Ashley, the ghost that's with you, her dad, her aunt, the bad guy whose name is Bill. Like, Bill's not a scary bad guy name. I'm not afraid of Bill. Okay. And then the boat captain who just exists for 2 seconds to drive you to this weird island. So it's okay. Like, I like these types of adventure games. They have more like interacting with characters. So this doesn't really have that. It's more like exploring a mansion and like figuring shit out. And so it was okay. But then I got to the second game, which was for the Wii, and I had like known nothing about this. It's like 4 or 5 years after. I think it's way better so far. I like it a lot. There's a lot of characters that you're interacting with. The puzzles have been decent so far, I will say. I only played like an hour of it, but it is catching my interest more in the second half, mainly because I feel like all the characters have more personality. But yeah, I will finish it. I think it's cool. I'm glad that I'm playing through. I'm glad they remade it. And people who like the originals seem to think it's a decent remake and that the changes they made to puzzles and stuff were good ones, in theory. But yeah, I think total it probably will take like 15 hours. Like, I think I saw something like the first one is like 5-ish hours, depending on how long it takes you to complete. And the second one is like, because it was at a later time with more stuff, and it was like 10-ish hours. But yeah, it's a neat adventure game that I'm glad was remade, that I can finally experience. So I'm having a good time with that. And yeah, so I'll continue on with that and Dragon's Dogma once I finish up Stardew Valley, probably sometime in the next couple days. So, what have you been up to? I saw you playing Metroid Prime.
Yes, that's the game I've been probably playing the most lately, but I'll just kind of like run through the games I've been playing.
All right.
So I started playing Alpha Protocol. Yeah. I haven't played a ton of it, a little over an hour. I was just kind of, I've been curious about this game because I feel like from what I've seen, like reviews, they're just kind of all over the place. And it seems like it's just kind of one of these like cult classic
games. Oh, it is. That came out.
But like, I gotta say, like, first thoughts, like, the shooting is really not great in this game.
That makes sense.
It the best way I can describe it is it kind of feels like, do you remember when we went back and played the very first, I'm just trying to think of like a game that is like a good comparison, cuz it just like, oh my god, like I can't be accurate at all. It's very difficult to like kind of like just be accurate with this game, so it can be a little frustrating.
Is it also is it not supposed to be though? Is RNG happening on each
hit? I feel like RNG is happening some. It yes, definitely.
Yeah, I think this RNG. I think Alpha Protocol, I think if I remember correctly, that was one of the main frictions of people who didn't like it, is I think it's supposed to be more like an RPG.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like the very first Mass Effect.
Yeah, which in my brain, that's what it's like. I never played it myself. I only watched Willy play it, my brother, who loves this game. But yeah, I always in my brain attributed it to being Mass Effect 1, but like if it was Mission Impossible instead of space.
That and I will say it feels worse.
Okay, an Obsidian game in year this came out. Sure, I could see that. Yeah.
So like it, I think that's probably the best comparison. Is it's like you go back to playing like the Xbox 360 Mass Effect 1.
Yeah,
but it feels worse than that.
Okay.
But I still want to kind of keep making my way through it. I'm gonna just put it on like the easier difficulty because, like as I said, like it is impossible to be accurate with the shooting. So like, and I guess like there's a disconnect there because like you're supposed to be like this like super amazing spy, and then like you're just like super inaccurate.
God, I want to play this so bad now that you have talked about it.
I've only played a little bit of that. I'm not hating the experience. I'm just kind of like, I'm just like cautiously optimistic of like, where is this going to be going?
So, yeah.
So we'll see. I also started playing Dead Island.
Okay.
This is like the remaster that came out. But like, this is just, it is just like a very generic open world zombie survival game, I guess is how I would put it. Where right now I'm in like chapter 2, probably about 8 or 9 hours into it, and I've just been running around doing fetch quests. You're just trying to get off the island, I guess, you know, but there is an impossible amount of zombies on this island, I gotta say. I killed so many already. It's like, this is not a very big island, and I've killed so many, like, I don't know if they just keep coming back. I don't know what's going on, but.
I had a question in my brain about this game that now, this is the remaster you're playing, you said.
Yes.
Do you know, I remember when Dead Island 1 came out, because my brother also has this on 360, and I remember at the time people not liking how it controlled, but then there was like an alternate control scheme to turn on that people like liked way better. I wonder if this like defaults to that. There was like some like...
Yeah, there's something with like, do like the skill sticks. I have found the best way to kind of deal with the combat is to not like swing the sword and first do first person combat. Instead, go with the, Hitman. You know, like Hitman, the newer Hitmans, where you have a knife and you can just chuck it. It'll like lock on and you just chuck the whatever, the knife or whatever. Yeah. This game has that. And I found that's a way more effective way to like deal with the combat is you just kind of lock on and you just like chuck the knives and the swords and the pipes or whatever you have at the zombies.
Okay, I looked this up, and apparently, okay. I can't see if it's in a remake or not. It's people sure. talking about the original, but it would default to, like, something in the controls would say that it was digital, and if you changed it to analog, it was, like, felt way better to control. And okay. I think the issue with this was, like, it was very much like a console port of like on PC, like it just didn't work right. well on PC, I think was part of the issue. Yeah, seeing this, people are very much talking about the controls a lot. So yeah. I bet the remastered remake you're playing fixed a lot of that stuff. But.
I bet it did, because it doesn't feel terrible at all. I'd be kind of curious. Maybe I'll go through the menus and just kind of see what it's set to. But like I said, I was using like just kind of like Skyrim, where you're just kind of like swinging your sword around or swinging your weapon around, and like it felt okay. But then I discovered if you just lock on and chuck the weapons, like Hitman style, like yeah. it's just way more effective. So, but it is, you know, it's an RPG. You get experience basically doing everything. I'm collecting everything I can. I'm leveling up. The skill tree seems like it's actually a pretty good skill tree. So I'm enjoying my time with Dead Island. It's a very pretty game as well. You're on like an Australian island and everybody's Australian. So
nice.
I haven't played a lot of games set in Australia. I don't know if you have.
No, not that I can think of.
So yeah, everyone has like an Australian accent. So it's at least something different in that sense.
Yeah.
And then I started playing Borderlands, and I played through the entire thing. That's really what I did last week. I kind of put everything off to the side, kind of like what you did with Stardew Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went on a bender with just the very first Borderlands.
I'll tell you, dude, I fucking love the original Borderlands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When I looked at the character menu, I was like, oh, I remember Lilith. So then that's the character I chose, and... You know, she had a lot of fun abilities. Because like she goes invisible and you can kind of like run around and like flank enemies and stuff. But yeah, the original Borderlands was it. And once again, I kind of played the remaster that came out a few years ago, but it aged very well. It's just a fun, you know, first person shooter where you get like all these weird weapons. And, you know, this one is definitely all about like vaults, which I feel like the second and third one, like never even talk about vaults.
Oh, they do constantly.
They do?
Yes.
Huh. But you don't actually go into a vault, right?
The end of three, I'm pretty sure, is in a vault.
Oh, okay. Like, I didn't get very far into three. I didn't like three.
No, me either.
I played two. I really liked. I know two you've played, like...
I liked two a decent amount. Okay, now you are awakening all these thoughts in my brain of Borderlands. I can't find a picture of it now. Have you ever seen what Borderlands' original art style looked like?
It was very generic.
It's fucking crazy to look at. I can't find like a good shot of it right now to even send, but I was reminded of that semi recently. So it's really weird that you played Borderlands, because I like remember looking at it and being like, ooh, I feel like it would have been way less interesting also if it was
that. Yeah, where I would say like, even if I went back and just played like the Xbox 360 version, it would still like the art style would still age well.
Yeah, it like it's just a very stylized look.
It is that is almost like a timeless in the sense that I don't think it'll ever look outdated type of thing. So, yeah. Did you see that trailer of the new Borderlands movie?
No, Borderlands? I did not. I watched that whatever one of the last E3s was where they like Gearbox did their presentation where Randy Pitchford was like on the set of that movie. I had no interest after that.
Yeah, it looks not great. But yeah. You know what? The original Borderlands, it's still a fun game to go back to. I had a lot of fun just kind of playing through and just... I mean, it's pretty mindless. You just run around, kill things, and just kind of level up, get experience, get better guns. Constantly getting better guns. So, no. And also with that remaster, like, you get all the DLC and everything, so there's still a lot of content I could go back to and play, but...
Yeah, no. I played a lot of that.
I was really impressed with how good the original Borderlands still is, so... And then lastly, the game, once I stopped playing Borderlands, I really got back into Metroid Prime. I played a lot of that over the weekend. But I was also at my girlfriend, so I just kind of took my Switch.
Yeah.
Because that's just easy enough to, like, just plug into her Switch port and then just pick up wherever, you know. And that is a really nice thing about the Switch. So, but no, that is a excellent Metroidvania, which, I mean.
Who could have guessed?
Metroid, yeah, yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of backtracking. I did find myself stuck in like this water area at one point, and before I had like the suit that can kind of like the zero gravity suit.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's painful to be running around in the water at like fourth like half speed or even slower than that.
Oh,
you're barely moving, and then you like mess up a jump, and then you're like way back at the bottom, and then you got to restart the whole thing, and you're like, I just want to end my life.
This is terrible. Sick.
Yes. But no, altogether, I've played Metroid Prime for close to 10 hours, I think, at this point. I think I'm pretty close to the end. I don't really have any context. It seems like I just keep kind of like bouncing back and forth and, you know, occasionally getting a little lost and having to kind of look up a guide of where I should go next.
I may have the original strategy guide for this game.
Oh, that'd be kind of neat to see. The one thing playing this, I will say that I always think of Zelda and how I just wish games like this, they all had like that Zelda where you could put icons on the map and be like, this is, or even just what the new Prince of Persia did, where you could kind of like take a picture of that and then just kind of look and be like, okay, I can't, because what happens is I'm like, oh, I haven't been in this room yet. Can I go over here? And then I go all the way over there on the map, and it's like, oh, nope, I can't do this yet with this new ability that I just got. So, like, that is one thing that I just kind of wish I could mark on the map and say, like, this is what's in this room. Don't even waste your time going back to this room until you get this one specific ability.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is also, like, you know, it's an older game, and but even with this remaster, I really wish they could have done something like that, because they did that with the remaster of that other Zelda game.
Link's Awakening?
Link's Awakening, yeah, which made, like, that was one of my favorite, like, Metroidvanias. I don't know if you'd call that a Metroidvania, but it felt like a Metroidvania to me, at least.
Yeah, I think it has a lot of those, like, traversal abilities and skills.
Yes.
A lot of those Game Boy ones did. So, yes. Like Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons are also like that.
Yeah, I just see a lot of DNA in, like, a lot of Zelda DNA in this Metroid Prime game, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I'm enjoying it, and the combat feels really good with the lock on, and just like the combat feels very, you know, it feels like a game that came out in 2024 or 2023, I guess, but No, Metroid Prime. It's a great game. I've struggled with a few bosses here and there, but, you know, just keep trying them over and over again, and eventually I get through it. So I think you would really enjoy it, but you said you didn't really like the original, right?
I didn't like it as very much at the time when I played it, like right. when it came out. I think I would be much more inclined to like it now, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, I know what it is, I guess.
Sure.
And I can meet it on its terms as opposed to, like, yeah, I don't know. That's another thing. Like, I just like games where there are people to interact with and stuff a lot of the time. Yeah, and, like, you're on, like, a desolate planet, you know, and there's aliens right. to kill, but there's not, like, interacting or anything. But, you know, it's a lot about, like, scanning and figuring out what's going on and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it took me a while to realize how important it is to be scanning everything. Because that's how you unlock a lot of things and, like, new doors and stuff. And I really wasn't using the scanning mechanic a lot early on. And then I realized, like, oh, that's, like, very, very
important. Yeah, and that was one of my, like, larger problems with it as a kid is, like, there's a lot of stuff in that game, especially in, like, a pre-internet era where you're, like, it's just not teaching you how to do everything, which is, like, you know, intentional, right. but... I was not figuring out a lot of what it was trying to teach me.
right. So that's where, like, having the internet and I can, like, look up a couple guides, and that early on I was getting stuck because of that. I was like, oh, I didn't realize I had to, like, scan these things. And that's how I, like, unlocked this puzzle to get to the next area. Like, I didn't realize how important scanning is.
Yeah. So. And I'll have to see if I can find that original guide. But back then, official Nintendo published guides were, like, the worst guides ever, in my opinion, because they would never tell you what to do directly. They would always, like, vaguely hint at stuff in a way that was like, why did I buy this?
Sure.
Just tell me where the fuck to go or what the fuck to do. And so you're reading it and they're like, oh, like, check out this area. Maybe something could happen. And you're like, just tell me, bro. I don't know. Uh-huh. It did that. Like, Pokemon were the main ones where it didn't do that, because, like, it had to give you, like, hard stat numbers and, like, this is when you evolve and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the Super Mario Sunshine guide I have from that time is, like, very similar. Same thing with the one that I always think of is the Donkey Kong Country 3 guide. It doesn't just, like, tell you how to get the DK coins. Because, like, each one was, like, a puzzle. It doesn't just, like, right. tell you how to solve those puzzles. And then it also does not even have basic walkthroughs for the secret islands. It just, like, vaguely says, like, there's secret islands. It's like, bro, that's like dozens of levels. What?
Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, so they all used to be like that if they were official Nintendo guides. That's why I would usually go with, like, Brady Games or Prima, because then they would just be like, this is the solution. And you'd be like, oh, cool, that's why I bought this guide. Thanks.
Yeah. Maybe you buy both if you're, like, looking for a quick hint and then it's like, oh, fuck, I can't figure this out. I'll actually just look up how to do it.
I'll have to see. I feel like I haven't seen those in a bit, but I did used to have all three of those guides, the Metroid Prime, Mario Sunshine, and Donkey Kong Country 3. So, but yeah, the Metroid Prime one, I just remember, like, being like, I'm stuck, let's get this. And then being like, ha ha ha, I'm still stuck.
You know what? I don't want to play this game anymore.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm glad you're playing interesting games, dude.
What I've been doing is I just, like, have a Excel spreadsheet, and I just randomly been just, like, I have, like, a formula, and it just randomly picks a game. So, like, that's how I've been just kind of doing it, just clearing off my backlog and playing games that I've been wanting to play. So.
I will say this before we finish up: Alpha Protocol is no longer available on Steam. For some reason, like, the page is there and it just says, notice Alpha Protocol is no longer available on the Steam store. The first review is recommended, and it has a link to purchase it on Good Old Games.
Okay, fair enough.
Which is, so, like, it still is available digitally. I just think that's really funny that someone it's was also like, I love Alpha Protocol this much, you should buy it here, basically.
It's also not backwards compatible, so I've been playing it on the Xbox 360.
Weird. I wonder if there's like some weird licensing thing. Like, I wonder.
I don't know. Cause like, I don't know. Because like they're owned by Microsoft now. So
it was published by Sega.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe there's some weird rights issue, but that's, it's really weird that it's available on good old games, but not on Steam. And it used to be. So it's just, it's really bizarre.
Yeah, that is strange.
It also, like, there's a lot of reviews from like very recently.
Huh.
Like this one is from April 4th. The guy played 74 hours and did not like it. He said the graphics are not very good, not up to 2010 standards. Bro, you're reviewing this in 2024. Do you even know what those standards are?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of these, but yeah, some of these are really funny. They're like, I played for 800 hours. Like, oh man, you like Alpha Protocol, huh, bro? And you reviewed it this year. Like, what the fuck? Yeah, but you can buy it on good old games. So that's neat.
I also bought like a bunch of Lego games.
Like which one?
Because they, I don't even remember. Because like there was this deal: buy one, get three free on Xbox.
Hmm.
So I bought like one of the Marvel sets. I bought the Harry Potter set, so you get both of those. Oh man, I ended up getting probably like, I bought like four like collections, and so I got like eight or nine Lego games.
I will tell you, if you got Lego Batman 2. You should play that.
I already have Lego Batman 2.
Lego Batman 2 is so good. It's so disappointing because the first one is like a weird linear level game that I didn't like very much. Then 2 is like this sick open world area with a bunch of cool missions and characters. And then 3 goes back to the stupid fucking weird linear shit.
Oh, I did get that DC Villains one as well.
Oh, I wonder if that was better. I just remember I loved Lego Batman 2. I thought that game was fucking sick at the time.
I remember when it came out, the DC Villains one was like kind of popular. And like my girlfriend keeps talking about like Harry Potter, and I was like, I bet that would be actually kind of fun, like the two of us just going back and just like dicking around with the Harry Potter.
I played some co-op on that with Kelvin for some reason. And it, yeah, it's a fine Lego product.
Like if you're just looking for like some like Harry Potter nostalgia, it's probably one of the better Harry Potter.
Oh yeah. And they, it'll be back in the day when they didn't talk. So you'll get to see them reenact the movies while like miming and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. So, and I, like I said, I think I ended up getting like eight or nine games for like $50. So nice. I was like, oh, that's definitely worth it.
Yeah. That's
cool. I don't know if I'm going to play through them all like, I don't know, but it's just nice to have.
Nope, that's so. It. You got to play them all. Lego Challenge. Everyone, get the Lego Lord of the Rings game and the two Indiana Jones ones for some reason.
I've played through The Hobbit. I don't know why, but I have.
Was that... was The Hobbit separate from the Lord of the Rings one? I don't remember. One of them had, like, weird crafting.
Maybe that was the Lord of the Rings Hobbit.
I don't know. All I know is... I remember watching my brother play Lego Indiana Jones and thinking... There's not enough characters in Indiana Jones for this.
Mm.
When you unlock the 18th Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's that's probably not interesting.
No. Man, I miss Lego games. I should play a Lego game.
Do you think Chase would like it?
Yeah, was wondering that. He has played... He has Lego Jurassic Park on his Switch. I don't know if he ever like played it really or not. And that's another one where like I did not purchase any of those. I purchased Lego Batman and Lego Marvel stuff. So I had not played Lego Jurassic Park. I wonder how that is. And I only bring up Lego Indiana Jones because it was bundled with Xbox 360s for like fucking 30 years. It was that and Kung Fu Panda on one disc. So
that's an interesting,
it was a weird combo. And it was so weird because originally they were coming with Viva Pinata and I was like, wow, what a sick game. And then they're like, yeah, no, with now it's a weird custom disc with Kung Fu Panda and Lego Indiana Jones. And I was like, well, this not as good in my opinion. But that was when my brother got a 360, he got those, and I was like, all right, I guess try to play Lego Indiana Jones. I don't fucking know. He might have also, he liked Indiana Jones as a kid. He might have also bought it for our PS3.
Wow, he liked it that much.
Well, I think he played it for, we had a PS3 first, so I think he like bought it on his own, and then it just came with his 360. But I never ended up playing it. I just watched him play. So, Lego games.
Lego games. I don't know if that sale is still happening, but I was like, this is just like just such an insane
sale. No, yeah, I remember I picked up some PS4 Lego Marvel game for like basically free. Oh, it was the Lego Marvel collection that has all three of the Marvel games in it.
Right.
And it was like $4 for a physical copy. So I have that, but I never played. I bet that's all right.
Yeah, I bet that's all right.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm going to play Stardew Valley. So,
well, like you can't do that because you have your plus one, minus one thing. So,
but I could add one because I've had it forever. Man, I don't know. We'll see. I was going to buy a game at the end of this month. That I canceled my pre-order for Sandland, the Akira Toriyama game, because I was just like, I'm not going to end up playing this. And a Kickstarter game that I backed like 12 years ago is coming out on the 23rd. So I want to play Dishonored. My time. I need to play Dishonored.
Do you own it?
I have the remaster, I believe, on PlayStation Plus.
Okay.
So, yeah. I've always wanted to play Dishonored. Like, it looks so much like my shit, and I love the Arcane games. So like I hope.
I mean, if you get into that, you could mess around with that one, and then they have like some DLC, and then the second one, and
yeah, like
the second one has like a whole DLC.
Once I finish Dragon's Dogma 2, which apparently I'm blazing through it faster than anyone has ever done in their lives, I want to try to see if I can fit Dishonored in. Because I've always wanted to play it, and I always like have it installed somewhere, and I'm like, soon, my friend,
someday,
and then I just never do, and it just sits there. So you have inspired me, though. You're always talking about all these cool games that I was like, man, mm-hmm. I wish I had played Alpha Protocol, but who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I just went on Amazon, bought it for probably like $5 used, and you know. Just giving it a chance.
Yeah, I was gonna say, even if I didn't want to buy it, my brother owns it on 360, so I could just take it with a 360 that he doesn't use anymore and play it. So.
You could probably just take both.
Yeah. They're both in the same weird little cupboard, so I just... he probably wouldn't even know. Notice. Yeah, so I could just borrow both. But yeah, that'll do it for us here this week. As always, the theme song is Sting Operation by the band Onomatoguchi. They're an excellent chiptune band. You should check them out. I was going to say next time I'll probably have most of the same stuff to talk about, but Harold Halibut it comes out the 16th. So I'll have played that at least to some extent by then. I assume I will just play it until I beat it, but I don't know how long it is, I guess. So. It's an adventure game. I would bet it's like 10-ish hours probably.
But, yeah, 10, but I would guess.
We'll see. And that's the kind of thing where like once I get in, I'm like, we gotta go. I gotta see
what
happens. So yeah. So we'll be back then with more hot action. I can't wait. You always pull up some weird shit where I'm like, man, you're playing this now? It's exciting every week.
You never know.
I never know. And yeah, that's why it's like, oh man, shit, I'm over here playing normal stuff. Matt's busting out Alpha Protocol in the original Borderlands.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that'll do it. We'll catch you next time with Matt's Mystery Games. Peace out.
Yep.